Well, first I'd like to address the issue of Bush's wars abroad. One thing is obviously clear, the military, as it's presently constituted, has made some significant changes recently from the way it was previously constituted. That being, in the 80s and 90s, they spoke of low-intensity warfare and fighting brushfire wars with what they would call local forces. Now they've gone straight out to more of like the old Blitzkrieg sort of plan. Highly technical forces backed up with massive infantry and whatever other tools they think are necessary, bombing into submission and basically taking up territory and holding it. The concept of being able to just have a technological force that would be overwhelming and not have causing massive casualties and the so-called peripheral damage and civilian casualties, which they say are unfortunate, but that's what comes with war. That model works fine, except when you have to gain and hold territory. Gaining and holding territory still requires, even in this day and age, deployment of massive ground forces. Presently constituted, the Pentagon believes that they can fight two wars like that simultaneously. As we've seen recently, they can't keep a grip on Afghanistan after dark, and they seemingly don't have a lot of control in Iraq as it's currently going. There's a good deal of controversy within the military itself. You'll find it in the War College and in the graduate school of the War College that the contending forces being the neocons, which are the neoconservatives like Wolfowitz and Pearl, who are exercising a lot of control with the Bush administration and pulling a lot of strings at the Pentagon. And it's real easy for them because the Bush administration has eliminated the middleman. We no longer have government being accountable to industry. We have industry right in the White House and in the Pentagon and everywhere else, with his entire board of advisors and all his staff and everyone being former CEOs. And returning CEOs, no doubt, when his term is up. Or over. We prefer over. One of the big problems between the neocons and the forces, traditional military forces in the Pentagon, is they would like to keep a military that's roughly similar to the one they had in the Cold War era because they personally pocket more money from it, whereas neocons would like to have a military of this blitzkrieg fashion. But therein lies a yet another problem. With their big push towards globalization, the neocons are isolationists and they don't want to like share any of the money with any other countries in the world, and yet the work has been like piecemealed out to a lot of different corporations and a lot of different international corporations. So consequently, the situation they find themselves with is they're for globalization, but they don't want globalization to affect the military, and they put themselves in basically an impossible position here. However, they are winning out over the generals who want to have the old sledgehammer-type military forces that they always had. And the reason not being is they gave them more control, and also, like I said before, the profits go directly into their pockets. They're still making all those jobs available for the generals. They can leave the military, as the most recent ones have, and walk right into a major corporation who has major contracts with the U.S. military and the Pentagon. They can go into office and public office and then return to the corporations after, obviously, they set up the pork barrel and the honey dipping for themselves. And that's basically what they're looking at. What we saw in Iraq was, once you get rid of the window dressing of the weapons of mass destruction, or distraction, the concept of fighting terrorism, which was the number two thing, and last and certainly least, democracy and fair play for the Iraqis, which is yet to come into being and probably never will, not in any grasp of the way that they described it would. Once we get rid of that window dressing, we see that They wanted to basically go into the Middle East, smash a fourth-rate military that was demolished from the first Gulf War, and most of their weapons destroyed or basically rendered useless in the intervening period afterwards by the UN inspection teams. Now, so they smash the Iraqis, but they don't get the respect in the region that they anticipated they would get because, one, people didn't like them smashing the Iraqi country, and two, they're distrustful, obviously, of what the United States has done. People say that they've expended all their goodwill in the region. I think their goodwill was expended more than a decade ago, given the way that they've, them and previous administrations have handled the Israeli-Palestinian question. Well, the smashing of Iraq was supposed to lead to the roadmap for peace in the Middle East, which has now taken some detours. The parties, both the Palestinian parties and the Israeli group, are not on board for all parts of it, and it probably leads right back to Bush and his advisors, who think they're pretty smart, but their worldview seems to be pretty limited. They don't really have a grasp on how to deal with a lot of these people in the Middle East outside of like outright threats and power. That's the situation abroad. If you look at Afghanistan, like I referred to earlier, you'll find that the much maligned French and German troops are the ones that are basically still there in large numbers, with the U.S. forces starting to shrink. And outside of 30 miles around Kabul during the day, and the actual U.S. military installations, they don't really have any power, hold any power, or exert any influence in Afghanistan anymore. It's gone back to a lot of the same problems that it had earlier, and a lot of the regional squabbling, the massive heroin production, and basically some of the more backward religious practices towards women and other things that were there previously. The war at home is part and parcel of the war abroad, in that the people who they want to fight the war are overwhelmingly the poor and working class people in this country. They want them to give up their sons and daughters. We have to have an analysis of that military. That military is almost 50% from the South. It is overwhelmingly male, made up only about 17.4% by women. Of the 14.7% of women, it's overwhelmingly minority women. Outside of the South, you'll get up, you know, the states like Wyoming and West Virginia, and states that are losing their population. This is where most of the enlistment is coming from, these poorer states. The overall age of the people is a surprising thing. It's not made up primarily of 17 through 19-year-olds like it had been. A large part of the forces were during the Vietnam era. What we're seeing is actually 20 to 27 and 27 to 35 are the largest two age groups, which shows to some degree that there's a large sort of professional army in the field. That's only as good as they want it to be, the individuals want it to be, in this army of one concept. After any conflict, what you're going to find is a lot of the cadre level, the NCO level people, will retire or leave. Some of them will leave in disgust. Particularly the past decade has been basically marked by an era of some intervention but no big conflicts, and they had a pretty good life in the military if they were career. That's all changed now, and the fact that their lives have become unpredictable and endangered, and they if they're living, breathing, feeling human beings, they may not have liked some of the things that they've seen done or participated in, which undoubtedly they'll be speaking about more in the future, but we're not hearing a lot of it now. The upshot of it is they're going to leave, and they have to have people to replace them, and those people are coming from the working class. Given the just outright economic misery in this country that is growing daily in terms of jobs and the inability to find jobs, the recruiters are getting what they say they're getting enough people. Surprisingly, it's not up, and there's no big, huge patriotic spike like there was after 9/11. Understand that huge patriotic spike after 9/11 lasted less than 2 weeks, and then the enlistments dropped off again. They're pretty much flatlined now, and that's because the images and the stories and a lot of the stuff that people are seeing about the war, and the fact that there was a large anti-war movement that rose overnight and in a lot of cases got the job done in terms of showing the American public that not everyone was in favor of it and raising a lot of issues, the enlistments are pretty much flat out there. I would not be surprised down the road if these idiots keep attacking every country that they think they can. They talk like Iran or Syria is on the board at any time, and I think they seriously underestimate the kind of economic and social devastation that they've already wrought in Iraq and how people in that region feel about it now. And while they think they may have some allies in Iran, I don't think they have very many at all. And I think that the Iranian people would probably fight as one in opposition to them. And it wouldn't be any rollover either, nor would Syria. And then they risk their whole roadmap to the Middle East at this point if they go doing something like that. But they're holding their line pretty well. They insist they have, no one's lied to the American public about weapons of mass destruction, and it's pretty clear that they did. Colin Powell said he didn't lie at the UN, and everything he said was true. And then some of the CIA analysis said that they were pressured into making shit up to make it look good at the UN, and which was also George Bush's speech, State of the Union speech, had the same garbage in it. And now they've pretty much thrown in the hat on looking for these weapons. They said there's 400 unexplored sites, but they were all low priority to begin with, and unless somebody comes forward for looking for reward money for turning in some weapons, that they're going to give it up. And the war at home and the war abroad are basically the same war. The working people in this country just have to stop supplying their children. We realize when we work with the youth in the communities that a lot of youth in a lot of communities have no other choice, and the best we can do is if they're bound and determined to go into the military, is to make them understand the conditions they face, some of the things that could possibly happen, and give them someone they could get in contact with to can help them if some of the worst things do happen, which will happen. And potentially look down the road, not getting the best or the brightest or even the least interested at this point. The concept that they would need a draft would be a real one if they do find themselves into two full-fledged flagrations at the same time.